This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. My name is Peddlin' Ron. It's October 18th, 2017. Welcome to Bicycle Talk, this week without my co-host Fran Storch. Unfortunately, she's a little under the weather today. So I am solo here. So if you wish to call me, please hold on to that thought until next week, and then we can chat then. This is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com, or you can visit Bicycle Talk on Facebook. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you would like to contribute or to be on the show as a guest, please contact me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. So we are going to move ourselves on to Ron's Rant of the Week because, oh, do I love that Rant of the Week. So here we go. You know, the rage thing, I talked about rage all last week. I talked about rage on my show, and we covered a number of different angles of it, and the road rage thing is just, you know, it's always there, it's always apparent. I hate to dwell on this, but we need to change people's attitudes, and we need to figure out a way to do this. So anyway, authorities identified and arrested a 21-year-old from Navajo, California, by the name of Aaron Paff, P-A-F-F is his last name. And it was around midnight after tracking down his pickup truck because he decided that he was going to mow down some riders that were in a Grand Fondo. You know, it was a California, it was a charity ride, really a charity ride. So here we go. I don't know what to say other than I hope Aaron is feeling really good about himself because, you know, it's just such a ridiculous thing. So anyway, Aaron Paff, bad boy, bad boy. You are my rant of the week. One rider, well, basically, according to witnesses, a blue Dodge Ram swerved and struck the cyclists as they rode single file on the right-hand side of the road. Single file. This is a witness. Saw this. Some of the witness told police the maneuver appeared to be intentional. It's a horrendous event, said California Highway Patrol Officer Andrew Barclay, himself a cyclist. Seeing this occur is terrible. One rider, having been thrown from his bike and into a ditch, was airlifted from the scene with severe and head and eye trauma. The other three were taken to local hospitals with injuries like concussions and road rashes. All four are in stable condition. So they're okay. They made out better than our folks out in Kalamazoo. So that's the good news. The driver fled the scene. And, you know, why? Why are you even considering it? A lot of people now have cameras on their bikes. A lot of people have the ability to record this. It's not wise to flee the scene any longer. Not that it was wise before. He didn't stay at large for very long, though. A motorcyclist who was traveling the opposite direction reportedly caught the truck on a GoPro camera seconds after the crash. The California Highway Patrol released screenshots from the footage along with a call for help from the public. Cyclists and Marin County locals spread the images on social media and tips flooded in. Authorities identified and arrested Mr. Paff, he's been currently being held on charges of felony hit and run causing injury. So anyway, they're saying that it's too early to conclude if the crash was intentional. It said that the police department is working on it with local attorney's office to determine whether to bring forward additional charges. If it was intentional, it's inexcusable, and it's a terrible thing to do. A lot of people are very angry about it, and I would say deservedly so. So anyway, that's just another case of rage because, you know, it's out there, and it seems like we have this conversation on a weekly basis now, so it's really, really unfortunate. That is my rant of the week this week. But wait, folks, I'm not done. Yeah, there's a little bit more ranting that has to go on here. There's a gentleman out there by the name of John Feidelberg, and John Feidelberg is part of a program that is on, I believe, Pay Radio, and also you can find it on the internet called Barstool Radio. And back in 2015, John Feidelberg wrote, "If you're in my way while I'm trying to get to or from work, then I'm running you over. I don't care if you're keeping in shape or saving the environment, you're dead." This is a popular radio show host who is saying this live on the air. So here I am saying it live on the air. I don't like you, and I'm calling you out, but I'm not the only one that call you out. They're calling you out because I went to Barstool Radio's website this morning just to look and see what's going on there. And just a few days ago, he posts, for those of you who don't know, I've been battling with cyclists since Sunday morning. The internet is a wild place. You can wake up on Sunday with a hangover, still drunk, etc., which is probably the main reason this got out of hand. And some cyclist, I'm not going to say the word, had dug up a blog that I wrote 2 years ago and said I hate them. That would be the blog from 2015. Then went on to into attack mode. Say what you will about cyclists. I've said a lot. But I've got to tip my cap to their organizational skills. Well, what do you know? They swarm like a buck of psychopaths. Psychopaths who want rules of the road both ways. They want to be respected as both motor vehicles and pedestrians. They're another bad word, but they're a formidable foe. Well, thank you so much, John. Yes, we are a formidable foe, and I am not giving up on you. You are going to be watchdog very, very carefully. You can watch him if you want to know more about him. It's www.barstoolsports.com. And just when you go there, go into the search column and type in cyclists, and you will get an earful or an eyeful, however you want to look at it, because there are also videos there. And this guy, this man needs to have all of us get together and continue the organized attack on him, because he is what he calls us. We're simply cyclists. We are out there sharing the road. We are out there paying taxes for those roads. We are out there riding responsibly. So be sure you do ride responsibly. Don't give this man any more fuel for his fire. Let him know that you're not happy with him. Do not subscribe to his radio show or the radio organization that may be sponsoring him. Well, I can't really say that. It's a kind of a call to action. You can do whatever you want. But you might want to reconsider, because this man is out of control, and he's broadcasting out of control. Here on Bicycle Talk, we like to talk a little bit more about some of the positive things here, which brings me to the next part of my show, which is On a Positive Side. So on a positive side this week, I am going to endorse something that Fran and I both did on, Saturday morning, and I'm talking in the wee early morning hours, very early morning hours. And we did something called Pedal to the Metal Ride. This was the second year that this ride was run. Last year, there were four people who did the ride. The ride starts very early in the morning. We left our house at 3 o'clock a.m. And we were in Hartford by about 4:15. And we met with a bunch of cyclists who were riding on the Hartford Marathon course, because the Hartford Marathon was also that day, last Saturday. And so what we did was we ended up riding the 26-mile course with a bunch of other cyclists. The previous year, they had a total of four people do this. This year, it got a little more organized, and a big, big shout out to Tony Trollis from Bicico and Kyone Wolf, who, if any of you listen to public radio out here, you will recognize that name. Anyway, they put together a really nice little event, and we all showed up, and we were encouraged to wear either costumes and or multiple lights, or whatever you could do to be seen and be a little bit of a spectacle and have some fun with it. Now, the beauty of this is at 4 o'clock in the morning in Hartford, which is generally a very busy place, there's nobody on the road. The only people that were really out there were the people that were helping set up the marathon rest stops. And so it was pretty quiet. There were, you know, a few police out there. There were definitely lots of encouraging horn toots from those who did see us out there, because we were truly a spectacle. We had lights coming out from everywhere. And hopefully I'll have a post on that. I didn't get any information back, and I'll have a post on that on my Bicycle Talk Facebook page soon, so you'll be able to see that. So big shout out to Kyone Wolf and Tony Tirolis for doing this. We had 50 riders this year, so we had a lot more. In addition, it appears that there has been some talk and negotiation with the Hartford Marathon Foundation, and they will hopefully be including this as part of their event next year. And you can not only do that event, but then you can also do the marathon afterwards, and you could double medal, because they give you a medal after each of these events. So that'll be kind of a fun thing to do. Anyway, pedal to the metal ride, really cool thing. Boy, was it early in the morning. Boy, I don't like getting up that early and riding my bike in the darkness, but it was so bright because of all of us being there. It was really great, and it was a bright moment in general. All right, I've got another little piece here, too, that I got a caller. I have a listener, actually, who listens to me out in Tolland, Chuck from Tolland, listens to both my show and also Fran's show before me, and Chuck called in this morning and caught me while I was babysitting Fran's show. Unfortunately, Fran is ill. And he said, I've got a great idea for you. And it's not a great idea. It's a spectacular idea. And we are going to now include this in the Bicycle Talk radio show. It is called the Maintenance Minute. Okay, so this is presented to you by a fine suggestion from one of my fellow listeners out there. And if you have anything like this that you want to contribute to the show, please feel free to do so, because we always like good suggestions like this. So my maintenance minute this week is going to be lubing your chain. Okay, how to lube your chain. This is a constant problem I see as being a former bicycle shop owner, and also being the guy that, I'm also fixing a lot of friends' bikes or riding with people that have talking chains, is what I like to call them. So this is an important thing, and it's something that's overlooked often on your bicycle. And let me see if I can give you some clues of information about lubing your chain and why you should lube your chain and when you should lube your chain. First of all, I talk, you talk, bicycle chains don't talk, all right? If they do, you got a problem, because they're not supposed to talk. They're not supposed to talk. They're not supposed to squeal. They're not supposed to scream. And they're not supposed to cry. Okay, that is something that they are really not intended to do. They should be very quiet. They should be really nice and quiet and happy. And that is a happy chain. A chain you do not hear is a happy chain. So I can be out riding my bike in a group ride, and I'll ride alongside someone, and I'll start hearing that dry, whirring kind of noise. It's a metal-on-metal noise, and it's not squeaking yet, but it's definitely starting to, like I say to people, it's starting to talk. And I will point out to them, and I'll say, listen. And they'll look at me and go, what? And they say, listen to your bike. Listen to your bike right now. Do you hear that noise? Yeah, I guess I can hear that noise. I say, you hear that whoosh, whoosh, whoosh noise is what I like to call it. Kind of a strange way of putting this, but I'm on the radio, so I have to figure this out. So anyway, if you hear that noise, you've kind of stepped over the edge. Your bike chain is actually talking to you, and it's sending out a request, and it's asking to please give it some lube. It's very thirsty, and it needs lube. So if you're hearing that, then that's a problem. If it has gone beyond that point and you start to hear a little tiny squeak that goes along with the whooshing noise that you hear from your chain and the talking noise, as I like to call it, you hear that little squeak, it's starting to cry out. If it's squeaking a lot, it's crying in pain. It's screaming at you. It's metal on metal. It's not good. It needs lubrication. If you were driving a motorized vehicle and that motorized vehicle made that sound, you would soon be on the side of the road with a major engine malfunction. So let's listen, first of all, and figure out what it is that we have to do and when we have to do it. Moving on, there's a number of different lubes that you can choose. You can choose a wet lube if you're riding in wet weather a lot. Rain, snow, slushy roads can wash dry lube off a bike chain. Wet lube will be a little bit more resistant. And there are a number of different brands that are out there that you can get. You can also use a dry lube if you live in an arid climate. Wet lube isn't necessary if you're going to be riding in dry weather conditions, and it attracts more dirt than dry lube. Dry lube will keep your chain cleaner, but you'll need to reapply it every 100 miles of riding if you do. At least, I'm going to say. I'm going to add an at least onto that. Moving on, a wax lube, if you use your bike to get around, wax lube is it's less messy but than other kinds of bike lube, so you won't get it all over your clothes. If you're riding your bike into work or in the store, wax lube also helps your bike chain stay cleaner and other kinds of lubes. I am not a huge fan of wax lube. I am a big fan of lubes that have a mixture, and maybe there is some wax in there, but I just don't like wax lubes. There's a couple of reasons why. I live in New England, and wax lube in New England below a certain temperature, let's call it freezing, is a really, really bad idea because the wax freezes. It doesn't freeze, it just gets really stiff. So your chain skips and pops and jumps and just really doesn't behave properly. So I'm not a big believer of that. I'll tell you what I'm a believer of when we get to the end of this little list here. Moving on, don't lube your chain with WD-40. Only use lubricants that were designed specifically for bike chains. WD is too thin of a lubricant, and it can cause dirt and grime to build up on the chain. So WD-40, if you do a little research on that, was made back, I believe it was back in World War II where they came up with WD-40, and it was used to spray onto the weapons to disperse moisture, to keep moisture off of the weapons that they were using in wartime. So that was its original intention, and then everyone decided, wow, this is a great lube, I can use it on everything. Well, you really shouldn't use it on everything. It's not great. So stay away from WD-40. And then we'll move to cleaning the bike chain. There's a few different ways of doing it. You can get some spray degreaser, preferably a pump spray. You can use just a regular liquid degreaser and put it on an old rag, and the rag will get dirty from the chain, so use one that you're not too attached to. You need a lot of degreaser on that rag, and a quick spray should be just enough. And another thing that I like to do, and some people do this and some people don't, but the particular lube that I use, which I'll talk about shortly, I actually use the lube and I soak my rag with the lube that I'm going to lube my chain with, and I actually use that to wipe down my chain with, because there is a certain amount of solvent that is in chain lube that helps the lube actually get in between the links. So anyway, that's another thing you can do. You can use that to wipe it down. I wipe it down a few times until I see it nice and clean on the sides of my chain. I do use a piece of steel wool and also a wire brush occasionally too if the chain is really bad. But I try not to let my chain get that bad, because that's really now we're digging into a big nasty problem. One that really kind of goes along with maybe that chain has seen enough life and it's time to get rid of it. But anyway, you hold that wet side of the rag up against part of the bike chain, and you just kind of pedal it around. Just pedal the bike around, and I put my bike up into a stand, and then I pedal it forward, and then I pedal it backward too, so I can get it in both ways and get most of the bulk crud off of the chain. And so you're running it back and forth, and then you got to be a little bit careful here, because you can derail the chain very easily doing that. So you want to be careful about that sort of thing too. Choose your bike. Once you've chosen your bike lube, you've decided how you're going to do this, you shake your container of lube thoroughly and make sure everything mixes well, because there are many lubes that have different numbers of mixtures within them to make it a good bike lube. And then you squeeze. I like the squeeze bottles the best. I don't like the spray bottles as much, the aerosols. They're not so good. They're not wonderful for the environment, and they're not so good because they just kind of spray lube in places you don't really need it. So I'm more of a drip squeeze bottle kind of guy when it comes to lubing. Anyway, you hold that bicycle, that bottle of lube, so that the nozzle is resting on the inside of the chain, and then you use your free hand to crank the pedal around backwards so that the chain moves around the chain rings on the bike. You run the chain all the way around the chain ring several times, continuing to squeeze the lube into each part of the chain as it passes by. Be patient. Hold the bottle of lube steady as you backpedal the chain. And then the other thing I like to do after I have completely soaked my chain with lube is I do a very, very quick and light backpedal with a clean rag and take off any absolute excess lube. And my big thing after that, and something that I think is a really good idea, is I then let the bike sit for at least 12 hours. So if you're starting to notice a conversation that you're having with the bicycle chain and you're not so happy about what it's saying and you're out on your ride, that's a good indication that it's time to do something about your chain. Don't do it before your next ride. Do it right after you get done with that ride. So then the next day you go out and ride your bike, which is going to be a minimum of 12 to 24 hours after you've ridden it that time, you're going to have a nicely set lubrication within the chain itself. And that keeps you from building up extra dirt and extra grime on the chain. And anyway, it really helps. So my personal lube of choice and is made by Boeing Aircraft, BoShield, and it's T9. I love this stuff. It's the best I've ever used. It's the one that lasts the longest. No, it is not the cleanest. No, it is not wax completely. It is a combination of product, and it is exceptional. I can lube my bike chain with T9, and I can ride it for, if I'm doing a lot of miles in a week, if it's, you know, over 120 miles in a week, I can probably get 2 weeks out of it. If I'm doing an excessive amount of miles, you're going to get only a week. But if you're only riding your bike, you know, 3 or 4 days a week, and it doesn't even total up to be 100 miles, you're going to find that you can probably get 3 weeks of lube out of that one lubing of your chain. So it really, that really solves a whole bunch of problems as far as lubing goes. Again, this is the maintenance minute. It wasn't a minute, was it? It was a lot longer. But, you know, I am pedaling around and I am a little long-winded about this sort of thing. And this is a pretty important thing. So lubing your chain, that's our maintenance minute for this week. Thank you again with Chuck from Tolland on this, who brought me into this. And we will continue this in our future episodes. So I got a few more things that we can talk about here. Possibly a cyclist that people have heard of before. He was on a number of pro racing teams from California, Levi Leipheimer. His house was destroyed in a Northern California wildfire. Really, really unfortunate. I know a few other people that live out there who have lost their homes. It's really unfortunate. I mean, it's wine country. It's a beautiful area to live. It's a beautiful area to ride your bike. And unfortunately, there's, you know, 2,000 homes that have been lost at least up until this time, probably more than that. So tough situation. Really feel bad. Sorry that Levi lost his home. Hopefully he didn't lose too many of his bicycle valuables. But I can tell you right now, when those fires come in, you have got to get out of there. You have no time to grab your prized possessions and leave. It's really unfortunate. So, anyway, too bad on that one. That's an unfortunate thing. I feel for those of you who are out in California and have lost your homes. I know that a lot of you are cyclists because it is a cycling mecca out there. The other thing, a quick shout out to my friends Scott and Jean Carter, who live in Puerto Rico. They're in Aguadilla, Puerto Rico, which is over in that northwestern corner of the island. And they had 210 or 215 mile an hour wind gusts in that last little hurricane that came through. By far not a little hurricane. I do have communication with them. They are okay. They're down to basics, And, you know, gasoline is now something that you're not really using much in your car if you're smart about it, because if you happen to have a generator, which they do have a generator, they're pretty much using the gasoline from the tanks that they filled up on their cars, and they are using it to run their generators. So they will run the generator only minimally, but at least they have an ability to generate electricity when they need to. They're also close enough to the Aguadilla Airport so that they have been, I've been getting text and some cell phone communication from them to know that they're okay. The interesting thing about it is because they're both very avid cyclists and have been for a long time. They were my partners at the bicycle shop for many, many years ago when we first opened the bike shop back in 1978. And they ride their bikes because you don't need a car if you, and you don't need to sit in line at a gas station for endless hours or possibly days as it is right now in Puerto Rico. You can just ride your bike. So all of a sudden they went from, boy, you know, this is a terrible thing, to, hey, we can get around, we can do whatever we want, we can get wherever we need to go. Why? Because they ride a bicycle. So that's a cool thing. Very, very cool. Another little piece that came out, and this, surprisingly enough, I pulled off of our good fellow friend and bicycle hater here at Barstool Sports. And there was an article here about Paris banning cars for a day. And this was just this was back in October 2nd, so it wasn't that long ago. And the cyclists took over the city, like he puts it, locusts. So that's how, whatever you wish to call us, that's fine. But anyway, this little piece from the Chicago Tribune, that Parisians and tourists were encouraged to stroll through the City of Light on Sunday as officials banned cars from its streets for a day. What a brilliant idea. What if every city that is a major city here in the United States went to the same policy? Just for the day. That's it. One day. That's all. One day, no cars, no trucks, and only for emergencies. Only emergency transportation only. And everybody else is not allowed. What a neat idea. How many people do you think we could get out on bicycles if we were to do this? So Paris has experimented with car-free days in the past, but Sunday marked the first time the entire city was handed over to ramblers, cyclists, and rollerbladers. So anybody who was out transporting themselves personally without the use of a motorized vehicle was encouraged to get out. It's a nice day for air quality, for enjoying the city, walking around without any noise. Imagine that, without the risk to be run over by a car. Just the noise. Let's back up on that thought. Can you imagine what it would sound like if there were no motorized vehicles on the road in a big city? You would be able to, like, hear everything around you. It would be such a cool thing. You could have a pleasant conversation with the person you're riding with. You could have a pleasant conversation with the person you're walking with. It would be very, very nice. So I would like to go and experience this just for the idea of what it must sound like. Just hold that thought for a moment. So anyway, people were riding their little city bikes around, and they were riding their regular bikes around. Families were getting out with their kids, and they were riding together. On Sunday, Paris told cars to stay in their lots, handing the streets over to reckless cyclists and walkers who flaunted their newfound liberty with wide turns and completely disregard for traffic laws. Well, that's not really true. It was really not that at all. It was really a very pleasant thing, and there were a lot of super happy people, and everybody was out having a good time. So this is a kind of a cool idea. Maybe you should talk to your city about it and see if they might be interested in having a free day of cars and trucks and motorized vehicles, except for emergency vehicles, of course. I'm not against that. And, you know, let's try to get this into a movement. I really like it. I like it a whole bunch. So anyway, a few more things here. That's our good friend again. Anyway, that Barstool guy, he was a fun guy. So I got a few more things that I need to talk about here today. And There are this one's kind of important. This is pretty this was a bicycling magazine piece. I picked up on it, and you know, I've been having this conversation with a few of the bicycle shops that are out there, and boy, this is a good subject. So if you're out there and you're listening and you work in a bicycle shop, or you also frequent your local bike shop, there was an article in Bicycling Magazine that said the three bike shop mistakes you need to avoid. So bike shop mistakes. So there are things that you can do when you walk into your bike shop that will make your mechanic really, really happy. And there's also some things you can do. The article by Bicycling is 8 ways to be the best bike shop customers and 3 ways to drive your mechanic nuts. So here's a good subject to touch on. And I saw this, and it brought out a lot of discussion this week and last week too, when I first saw this with my local shops that I call on. And you got to understand, the local bike shops, or LBSs as we like to call them, do a lot more than sell and service bikes. Many organize community rides, they help with outreach programs to get kids on bikes, and they even offer an oasis within the concrete jungle for weary cyclists in search of drivetrain rebuild or some good conversation, or maybe a little lube on that chain. Of course, if you're stopping by to put lube on the chain and then you're riding out, you know, we discussed that earlier. So we'll move on from that one. Most bike shops also operate on thin profit margins and have lost significant sales to online shopping, which is why they love repeat and friendly customers. If you can become one of those customers, there are plenty of potential perks beyond just knowing that you've helped your store. Discounted service sometimes happens from that. You get maybe a friend price, quote unquote, on retail goods. And most importantly, the hard-won status of becoming part of the bike shop itself. Your bike shop is, I guess, probably the best way to put this out is, if any of you remember watching a program on television, a sitcom called Cheers. And Cheers is about a local bar. And the local bar had a cast of characters in it, which were all very colorful and interesting. And they would be there every single day, and they would kind of hang out at the bar because it's where their friends were. Bike shops can be the same way. They really can. If your bike shop is not that way, if you have a feeling of, I don't belong here, maybe try another bike shop. Check it out. You know, that this is a time when bicycle shops are stretching even out a little bit further to try to become more and more friendly with you. And if they're not, try another shop. Just look around, see what you can find. But, you know, it should be a safe haven for you. It should be a place where you go and you stop by the bike shop, and the bike shop is a place where you feel like you're amongst really good friends. And, you know, it's part of your family. It's a good, good thing. So you need to... look into finding that friendly, nice bike shop. And I know they're out there because I call on an awful lot of them. If you are not one of those friendly, outgoing bicycle shops that does things for your community, that is very careful about, you know, learning who your customers are and making sure you pay extra attention to them, and that, you know, you really want their business and you want to go forward with it. If you're not one of those stores, it's time to make a change, because there's something they call stores who are not that, out of business. So I'm just going to, you know, let you know this is the way it is. So here's what the best bike shop customers do. Now, this was a survey of bike mechanics, sales associates, and owners of bicycle stores across the country. Okay, so first of all, here's what the best bike shop customers do. Number one, they listen to the mechanic. If you're walking into your local bike store because you know how to fix your bike, but you're going in there to tell the mechanic how it's going to be done, you might want to reconsider that thought pattern. You're walking into their store. You're asking them for their opinion. You don't have to accept their opinion, but you really should listen to them. And it says here, quote unquote, a good customer is somebody who enjoys riding their bike and cares about it, but also will take recommendations and is aware that there may be things that they don't know about their bike. And that is from Robin Graven Milne from Brand New Bikes in Brooklyn, New York. And even more, and maybe even do a little bit of research for before you walk in the door. People who research ahead of time and come into the shop knowing some of the things about the model they want or the kind of riding they're going to do, they're better to work with because they have a better idea of what it is they want. And they don't, you don't end up standing there going, I don't know, I just need a bike. There's different types of bikes. Do a little research before you walk in. And that one came from Joe's Bikes in Portland, Oregon. So there's some things that you you want to be prepared for when you walk through your door. Show interest by asking questions. And this is from a Beer City Cycles from Woodfin, North Carolina. And this gentleman says that his favorite customers are the ones who aren't afraid to ask dumb questions and want to listen to what I have to say, even when they already know what the answer is. You know, there are no dumb questions. There are only questions. So let's not even look at it in that respect as a dumb question. That was from Nathan Hockey from Beer City Cycles in North Carolina. Another one here, stay open-minded. A good customer comes in with an open mind and understands we're trying to work with them to put them on a bike so that they can have a great day. And that's from Jordan Cullen from the Bike Chain in Roseville, Minnesota. So these are all suggestions that are coming out of bike shops. Provide occasional refreshment. So anyway, and then the exclamation after this is like Mark exclamation point. So apparently there's a customer here. So great customers, quote unquote, are the ones who bring us food and beer. For real. Mark is a guy who comes in every Friday and drops off 24 beers every Friday afternoon. Boy, I hope there's a lot of employees there because 24 beers is a lot of beers. He's a good dude. He never asks for a discount. He always drops off beer. We have other regulars who bring in coffee and donuts. So I have to say, the people who bring food, those are our favorites. That is from John Wilkinson from Silex in Columbia, Missouri. You know, that is a very common thing that I used to get when I had my bike shop, is that people would come in and they bring presents. And the presents are always, it's always food and drink. It's, you know, we're hungry, we're working hard, especially in the summer when we're really, really toiling away at it. And we, you know, we really need to get ourselves a little bit of nourishment to keep us going, because sometimes we don't have time for lunch because it gets so darn busy. You know, I'm in a seasonal area, and it's feast or famine over here in the Northeast. And we either are really, really busy, or we are really, really wondering when we'll ever be busy again. So it's because of the weather, it's very weather related. And so, you know, if you catch us on a super busy day and you bring in food, you are treasured by those who work in the bicycle store. Absolutely treasured. The other thing that this creates, just so you know, is the folks behind the counter, the folks behind the repair stand, they don't forget you when you do things like that. As a matter of fact, they probably remember you to a point where you might find a couple little extra things that may have been wrong with the bike are no longer wrong with the bike. They might squeeze in a little extra time to take care of you. So, you know, yeah, is it bribery? Maybe a little bit. Are you definitely buying off your mechanic? Well, yeah, but you're also doing a very friendly gesture, and you're helping out that mechanic and in other ways, too. Again, backing up to the original statement of the bike shop margins are very thin. I would say if I was going to pick an industry that has the most underpaid employees, and not that I should come down on anybody who owns a bicycle shop because of these margins that we're dealing with, I would say it is definitely, they definitely can use anything extra that you can give them, because they do really, really appreciate it. To be a bicycle mechanic, to be a certified bicycle mechanic, requires time, requires commitment, it requires investment, it requires investment in your tools, it requires investment in your knowledge and learning additional things about, you know, what it is that you need to know about because there is some new suspension system out there, or there's some new brake system out there, or, you know, now there's, you know, different derailleur systems and there's different spacing, and there's just a countless number of things that you need to know to be a good bike shop and to be able to properly service your customer. And I think, unfortunately, some of this is taken for granted. And I'll tell you, that's something that you really need to appreciate, because bike shops are, you know, they're working people. The reason they do this, a lot of them, is because they love it. That's really what it comes down. They are like Pedal and Ron here. They love being around bicycles. They love being around people that ride bicycles. They love being around anybody who wants to talk about bicycles. They just really, really do appreciate that. So anyway, just come in at it at all. And what makes a great customer is that even if they don't come in and drop off several thousands of dollars or hundreds of dollars or whatever, just seeing someone progress in the sport, they come in wanting to do a charity ride, or they start riding their bike to work. Then you see them 6 months later and they've lost like 15 pounds and they're saying, what's the next step? What's the next bicycle? They get really, really enthused with what they're doing and they want to share their story with you. So let them share the story. That's a cool thing. And be comfortable with going in and sharing your story with people. We like to hear it. Those of us who are in the bicycle industry really, really love to hear your enthusiasm and as I have called them in the past, the born again athletes or the born again cyclists that remember you used to ride a bike when you were a kid and then, you know, that went away, you got married or you had a family or you did this or you had this job that consumed all your time. And then finally one day you looked over at the bicycle when you were walking by the bike store and went, you know what? This has got to end now. I need to make a change. And then you walk in and you get yourself a new bike, or you pick up a nice used bike somewhere and you get it serviced up real nicely and it's working great. Or maybe you just pull your old bike out of the garage or out of the barn or wherever it's been hiding for too many years. By the way, bikes get sad when they're there. So don't let your bike get sad. But anyway, they all of a sudden start riding again, and it starts out with a couple of miles and then it turns into a couple of more miles. And then pretty soon it turns into, you know, a ride with a friend who has been riding all these years, who wants to take you out and show you around and show you some of the really cool roads that they like to ride on. Next thing you know, you're maybe joining in with a local club and you're learning even more bicycle routes that you can ride on, and maybe you're meeting a whole bunch of new people that have the same enthusiasm as you do. It's you know, we are a family. We are a family of people who adore two wheels. So anyway, that's a cool thing. So now moving on to, here comes the nasty stuff. And I'll only say this because there's some abuse out there, and customers who walk into bicycle stores and other retail practices, it doesn't necessarily need to be a bicycle store, have to they have to pay attention here, because this is pretty darned important, and this is what they loved you to cut out. Okay, zero trust in the mechanic's expertise. If you walk in the door, and I don't care what your knowledge is, I don't care what your educational background is, I really don't care how much you think you know about bicycles, when you walk in and you don't trust the mechanic and you don't listen to what they have to say, you start to lose the confidence. So here it is. This is from, once again, Beer City Cycles in North Carolina. The hardest customers are the ones that think they know everything and argue with me about stuff, whether it's a repair or buying a bike. So please don't go in there with the know-it-all attitude, because that's just not going to win over the person who's dedicated 30 years of their life to this. You know, you're going to a bicycle store because you're looking for good advice and expertise. So please don't argue with them. I had a saying I used to do in the bike store with my employees, because, you know, my employees would become very much extremely well-educated and well-versed in what they were doing. They walked the walk. They talked the talk. They all rode their bikes. They all learned a lot. They learned a lot from me. They learned a lot from others. And they were always starving for more information to learn. So they really took pride in the fact that they knew all this. And they, I would tell them, because we would have customers that would walk through our door, and this is not uncommon. I've had this conversation with other stores too. They would come in and they would definitely want something that we knew was not a good idea. Okay. Maybe it was a part on the bike. Maybe it was an accessory that they were putting on the bike. Maybe it was a type of bike that really didn't suit what they were really looking for. But what I told my guys who work for me is I said to them, look, you give them your opinion and then sell them what they want. Because to be in a bike store and to be that personnel in the bike store and then to start an open argument with a customer is just as bad an idea as to be the person who walks through the door and start an argument with the bike shop personnel. So remember that one. If you are listening to this and you are an employee of a bike shop, give them your opinion and then sell them what they want. That's a win-win situation. Here's why. Because they're going to come back 6 months later, maybe a year later, maybe 3 years later, and they're going to say, you know, you told me 3 years ago that this was probably not exactly what I was looking for, and I didn't hear you, and now I'm back to listen. And or they're going to find out on their own. They're going to be a little embarrassed, but they'll come back. They will definitely come back because you gave them an honest opinion of what you thought they could use, and they had to learn the hard way. But that's okay. That's okay. So here's another thing that we'd love you to cut out if you're walking into your local bike shop. Come in with no patience. Okay, here we go. This is from the Peddler Bike Shop in South Haven, Mississippi. The biggest problem they have is customers that are people that are relatively aggressive on frames, if you're on time frames. So if you're backed up for a week, they think that they're the most important person in the world and should be prioritized. Well, you know what? I'm gonna jump on Nathan a little bit on this one. This is Nathan Phelps from the Peddler Bike Shop in South Haven, Mississippi. We had a way of dealing with that at our store. And what we had was, if it was someone who absolutely had to have something right away, and I understand that. I understand that, okay, I need this for a big ride that's coming up, whatever it is. I should have brought it in earlier. Yeah, I know that. But I really, really need it. And what can I do to get to the front of that list? You charge them for it. That's all there is to it. The best way to deal with that is to have a surcharge for those who wish to make sure that they get, you know, their service in a timely fashion. We used to have something at my bike store, which is what I opened the store with, which was one-day bicycle repair, because the other store in town would always fall behind 3 weeks. And quite honestly, I just didn't have the space to store 3 weeks' worth of bicycles. So in order to eliminate that, I would just turn the bikes over as quickly as possible. And yeah, I worked some crazy hours when I first opened my store. 80-hour weeks were pretty common during the really busy season. As my business progressed and I got a little bit better at it, I would hire more employees. The more employees I would have, the more the volume we could handle. We had a little bit bigger store with a little better storage, so we could handle that too. But we always tried to turn the bikes over in a day or two, or at most three. And we were pretty good at it, because what I always found, and if you're in a bike store, I'm sure you'll understand this, unless you're extremely organized, that part that they need on that bike maybe didn't get ordered until like the day before the bike was going to get fixed, and then that delays it once again. So turning the bike over quickly is really important. When my bike store got to the point where it was very, very busy, and we were, you know, drawing in not a big bike store, but drawing in 25 to 30 repairs a day during the busy season, our turnaround time was, you know, 2 to 3 days on average. But if someone wanted that extra service, then we would take care of it. Also, that person that brought in the food and brought in the beer, for some reason, they'd always end up in the front of the list. So just a little heads up out there. Yes, there are ways of getting better service at your store if you absolutely need it. I was also really, really big on if I knew someone was riding their bike every single day, whether it be a commuter, whether it be a an enthusiast, but they were like really married to riding that bike every single day, I would strongly encourage, number one, a second bicycle so they would at least have a backup bike. I also kept backup bikes in the store, which is not a bad idea. And a lot of stores now have rentals, so you can do that for your best customers. You can definitely take care of them. So back here to that wonderful list here and that list of what the bike shops would love you to cut out. And this is it, the worst. Expect hours of help and advice only to buy the product online or elsewhere. So if your customer comes in and all they do is fish you for information for hours and hours, they're only doing it to buy stuff online. We tend, this bike shop in Cookeville, Tennessee, Cookeville Bicycles, tends to not give as good a service because they feel like they're just abusing and scanning our QR codes on their phones and not coming back to buy anything. Well, that's not really a great way of approaching it. And there are some skills that could be used in order to kind of fish them back out and see exactly what they're doing, why they're asking you for all this information. One of them is, are you ready to buy today? I have this product in stock and I can help you with it right away. There are some sales tools, and I would advise Warren Jansen at Cookeville Bicycles to maybe take a look at some of the sales techniques that you can use. You are always going to get someone who's going to abuse it. Back when I was owning a store back in the day, we didn't have internet problems. We had mail order catalog problems. And the ones that were the worst, and if this is you, pay attention. The ones that were the worst were the ones that came in with their little mail order catalog rolled up underneath their arm and went over and sat down at my shoe display and started trying shoes on. I knew what they were doing. They even had the catalog with them. They were not real smart about it. So, you know, if that's you and that's what you're doing out there and you're going in to milk the local bike store who is, you know, struggling every day for margin in their store, and you're going in there to do that and then go and buy it elsewhere, just reconsider. The other thing that happens, too, is when you do more of your purchasing in the local bike store, the coolest thing about it is that whole service issue that we were talking about earlier just kind of gets put in a different perspective. So when you walk through the door to have some service done, even if it's just a quickie, like you got a flat tire that day, you're usually in and out of the door in, you know, 10, 15 minutes. They're going to take care of you. They take care of those who take care of them. That is the way it works. So anyway, the online thing has become a big issue in the bicycle industry. We're definitely having some struggles in numbers because of that. And we just want you to pay attention to how to get your best service out of your local bike shop. The big thing is, if you don't treat your local bike shop right, if you don't take care of them like you would like them to take care of you, they're just not going to be there. And that is a tragic story. And I know right here in Connecticut, over in Eastern Connecticut, we are losing two stores at this very moment. They're going away. One has been in business for 30 years. So it's, you know, this is something you really need to take a look at and think about. And I just really need to remind people more about this sort of thing. You want to take care of your local bike shop. So that's kind of a theme that I got into here today at the end, towards the end of the show. I've got a few other things I'd like to talk about before we leave. I also have a list of things for future episodes here. But the three bike shop mistakes you need to avoid and how to be more friendly with your bike shop. Just really think about it. You know what's a great conversation to have? Go out to your local bike shop and ask them. Ask them what I just told you. Ask them the do's and don'ts. Ask them the rules of engagement in their store and strike up a really friendly conversation about it. What really irritates you about customers? What is it that, you know, what that you'd like to see? What would you like to see better from me as your customer when I walk through the door? Do you want me to have more knowledge? Do you want me to, you know, what is it you think will help us both get ourselves through our day together in the bike store? Something I want you to pay attention to, and this is a funny little thing. I saw this again on a site, and I want for next week or for the following few days, I want you to think about and get back to me at either my Facebook page or also at the email address. That would be bicycletalk@gmail.com. I want you to think of the weirdest things you have found on a bicycle road ride, or it could be off-road too. So you're out riding your bike and something catches your eye and you look down and you go, oh my God, you're kidding. And maybe you reach down and pick it up because it's okay to do that, and you bring it back home with you. It's called road booty. All right, so I want you to think about road booty. You're going to think about it for next week. We're going to talk about it a little bit more. But maybe pick out some of the weirdest things you've ever seen when you've been out riding on the road, and let's hear what your most interesting road booty is. So we are approaching the end of the show here. I would like to talk about some upcoming events that are in the making out here in the Northeast. One of them that I've been promoting heavily, and I was actually talking to a number of people last night about it at another cycling-oriented gathering, is the Connecticut Series of Cross. And the Connecticut Series of Cross is a cyclocross series here in Connecticut, a series of 8 different races, 2 of which I have been the race director for, and then there are others out there too. So what we have coming up is this weekend, it's Cross Weekend in Connecticut. And you can find out more about this at www.ctseriesofcx.com. You can go right to that website and that will give you more information. But I can tell you, coming up on October 21st in New Hartford, Connecticut, is Brody Cross. And that is new for 2017. The day after, on October 22nd in East Hampton, Connecticut, we have Belltown Cross. Interesting cross race. Why? Because Belltown is East Hampton. Why is it called Belltown? It's called Belltown because it was a bell factory there that made bells. Yes, the ringing type bells. And they have really cool prizes at the Belltown Cross race. Yes, they are bells. That's a spoiler alert. But anyway, it's just a neat idea. I love it. I just absolutely love it. On November 4th, there is Cheshire Cross in Cheshire, Connecticut. On November 5th, that's another big weekend, the 4th and 5th of November, Newtown Team 26 Cross on November 5th in Newtown, Connecticut. And then the final race of the series, which is Then the next race after that is March Farms Cross on November 24th in Bethlehem, Connecticut. And then the final race of the series is Elm City Cross, which is in New Haven, December 17th. Anyway, you can find out more about that there. There is also an event coming up on the 22nd if you're not into the cross racing scene, but you just want to go out and ride your bike with a bunch of people and have some friendly times with them. There is Bike Walk CT Discover Suffield, and it's in Suffield, Connecticut on October 22nd. You can find that at the www.bikewalkct.org website, and you'll find information there. You will also find the annual dinner information, which is coming up on November 3rd. And the MC there will be Kyone Wolf from the WNPR and the Colin McEnroe Show. And she's a technical producer and announcer and photographer for WNPR. And anyway, she's also an avid cyclist, and we got to ride with her last weekend. So anyway, it's something you may want to check out. The featured speaker there will be Karen Jenkins from the League of American Bicyclists. She is the chair of the board of directors of the League of American Bicyclists and managing principal for Development for Good. a consulting firm specializing in fundraising, public affairs, and board development. So anyway, she should have a really nice speech. I can't wait to go there and meet her there. Another thing that, and I'm going to throw this out there because this is important, there is something called the People's Choice Awards. So the People's Choice Awards for this year's honorees will take our cue from members. We invite all current Bike Walk Connecticut members to nominate a public official, a municipal employee, or a citizen advocate who has made major contributions to making your town or all of Connecticut a better place to bike and walk. And if you go onto their site, onto the Connecticut Bike Walk site, you will find that you can submit a nomination there. I'm going to try to post this on my Facebook page also. It needs to be in by Wednesday, October 25th. Are we out of time? Anyway, I'm sure they'll take a late one if they have to. There's also a silent auction there, and you get to win some neat stuff if you're bidding on it. It's a good thing. It's a good fundraiser. It's a nice meal. So check it out. It's the annual dinner on Friday, November 3rd for Bike Walk Connecticut. It will be in Hartford. More information online. So my name is Peddlin' Ron, and you have been listening to Bicycle Talk. Without my co-host, Fran Storch, so I'm solo today. A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. Remember, you can always send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you would like to contribute or to be on the show as a guest, please contact me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. Excuse me. This is Peddlin' Ron. Remember, keep that rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS, Storrs. Thank you for listening.